Good morning. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is Dr. Ann Horak. Dr. Horak is the director of the Religious Studies program here on campus, and we're here to talk about the Religion and Culture Speaker Series, which kicked off earlier this fall and is going to continue in November and then next semester as well, and perhaps even after that. Ann, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, let's talk a little bit about religious studies, the program, because as you and I were discussing before, there are a lot of misconceptions about religious studies. Some people think about, well, it's a theology-based thing. It's a Christianity. It's a seminary. It's just stories about, you know, the Bible or religious history. But if you could clear that up for us a little bit.
Absolutely. So religious studies is an academic discipline. It is non-sectarian. It is not promoting, nor is it denigrating, any of the world's religions. It's studying them. It's studying them in the same way you would study history or literature or political science. In fact, one of the things that I love about religious studies is that it does allow you to bring in all of the liberal arts. When you're studying religions, you're studying their history and their literature and their political science. You're also studying philosophy. You're studying sociology, anthropology, music, art, architecture. All of that goes into the world's religion. So it's a great way for students to get a sense of what different cultures are like and how they have developed and how they continue to influence our culture today. One reason I decided to start this series is because when I would tell people that I directed religious studies or I teach religious studies, people would say, oh, well, I kind of work on religion. And they would start to talk about their projects in history, in English, in political science, in philosophy, in music, ethnomusicology, in all of these different fields. And so it dawned on me, you know, religious studies is happening all over the university. We just don't realize it because that's not what it's labeled. And so if I could pull together all of these different speakers and have them share the work that they're already doing, it would help us have a better understanding of the degree to which religious studies infuses our culture and our campus.
And so when you put this program together, how did you go about deciding, okay, who do I get to speak? What are perhaps some of the areas that our students need to be informed in or they want to be informed in?
Well, it was really simple. I composed an email. I'm thinking about doing this speaker series on religion and culture. Is anybody interested? And I sent it out to people who I knew were working in the area, and they also sent it out to people who direct other programs, so I knew that they would have connections. And within about a week to 10 days, I got 16 responses saying, I would love to present. I would love to talk about my work. And since then, more responses have trickled in. So there's so many people who are doing different work in this field. And so then I just began to say, you know, when are you available? When do you have a book coming out? When are we going to be, you know, Cesar Rivera, who's going to be our next lecture in November, he's teaching a class in religious studies. His class is on religion and the law. This is the first time he ever has taught the class. So I thought we'll have him speak in November as kind of a preview, kind of an advertisement for this new course. So I've really put together the schedule just based on people's availability and what works best for them in terms of their own work, in terms of classes they're teaching, in terms of books that they have coming out. But I have so many people interested in speaking that it was very easy to put together 6 talks for this academic year. And I plan for it to go on for the next 2 or 3 academic years. As long as I have people who want to share their work, we will continue to offer the series.
As I mentioned, this program kicked off in September, so would you mind kind of sharing with us what we missed?
So in September, we actually had somebody from outside UTEP, but this had already been set up through the history department. Ben Brower, who is at the University of Texas at Austin, came in and spoke about French colonialism and the North African pilgrimage to Mecca. So he was really focusing in on Algeria and Morocco and during the time of colonialism in those countries, how the Muslims in those countries got to Mecca and sort of the political, you know, negotiations in the background. That's been our only speaker from off the UTEP campus, but it was a great opportunity. He's a very well-respected historian, so it was a great opportunity to bring him here and have him have an audience at UTEP. Then in October, we had Brian Yethers, who is Assistant Director of English. He is an English professor. He has a new book that just came out on Moby Dick, and that's what he presented on. He talked about Herman Melville and Moby Dick and some of the religious crises in Melville's own life and how that appears in his work, not just Moby Moby Dick. He was really talking about a wide variety of things that Herman Melville wrote. And that was an opportunity for him to introduce his new book. And he sold some books at that event and really gave an excellent talk. So those are the two that we've missed. Coming up in November, as I said, is Cesar Rivera. He is a lawyer here in town. He is a member of the local chapter of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And he's going to be talking about same-sex marriage and religious freedom, something very much in the media today. Really, what are the issues? What does the law say about people's ability to express their own religious freedom and when that becomes crosses the line into discrimination?
We have been exposed over the last few years, I guess, to, well, Judaism and Islam, Christianity and Catholicism. But why is it that when you talk about Christianity, Judaism or Islam, it raises ires?
Well, it's interesting. We're doing that right now in my class, my major world religions class. And recently I had the opportunity to attend the fabulous Parliament of the World's Religions. And I heard at the Parliament Jane Goodall speak. And Jane Goodall was making connections between her work with chimpanzees and humans. And she said that, you know, chimpanzees are extremely nurturing and extremely loving unless somebody leaves. And if somebody leaves the chimp group, they will go out and they will find that person. They will hunt that chimp and they will kill them in a very brutal manner, much more brutally than they will kill animals of other species. And she kind of was making the connection to the three Abrahamic faiths. We tend to be much more brutal with each other, the faiths to which we are related. All of us trace back to all of the Abrahamic faiths trace back to Father Abraham, to the covenant with the one God. They're the three monotheistic faiths. And yet they are more violent to each other than they are to other religions. And that's, to me, I think is very interesting. I think you fight more with your brothers and sisters than you fight with people outside your family. And we see that with those three faith traditions. They all seem to want to make the claim to being the one true faith, the actual children of God with whom the covenant has been maintained. And that, I think, causes tension between those three faiths.
And what about the fact that, you know, some people say, well, you need to remove your blinders, you need to be open-minded, and that goes for Christians as well as Islam or Jews, but the fact that need to be open to other religions and not just shut down and say, forget it.
Well, that's what I think religious studies is such a great place for. I mean, students, when they come into the classroom, they're hesitant. They'll often say at the beginning of the semester, like, I don't want to get into an argument. You know, I don't want to make anybody angry. And so religious studies is a space where you can have those kinds of conversations. I tell them over and over again, this is not church. And in fact, I'm not going to let you try to proselytize each other, nor am I going to let you denigrate each other's faith beliefs. Or if somebody doesn't have a faith belief, you know, you're not going to be allowed to attack each other on that ground as well. Everybody is going to come in here and have a discussion in an academic manner. We're going to try to take the emotion out of it so that we can actually study it. And once students understand and trust that they are free to do that, then they're able to ask questions. I don't understand why. And then they'll ask a specific question about a religion. You know, why do Muslims do this? Why do Jews do that? What is Buddhism really about? You know, do they believe in a God or not? You know, they're free to ask those kinds of questions because it's not being done in an atmosphere of judgment. It's being done in an atmosphere of investigation.
Here in the El Paso region, as you're well aware of, it's a heavily Catholic population. So recently when Pope Francis came to the United States, there was a lot of media attention about him. Did that come up as a topic at all in your class, and what kind of discussions were brought up?
Absolutely. I mean, students, I think, are very interested in all of the stuff that happens in the media around religion. And Pope Francis, of course, has been in the media a lot lately. In fact, one of the things that we do in my class is the students are required to tweet. So they are required to go out into the Ethernet and find stories and share them with the class and comment on each other. So I want them to bring content to the class, not just me bringing content to the class. Pope Francis is very interesting because he is, in some ways, very radical. But in other ways, he's really talking about what the scriptures actually say. today. We spend a lot of time with all of the world's religions looking at the scriptures and then discussing what those religions have morphed into. So certainly the scriptures of Christianity are all about helping the poor. They're all about building bridges. Jesus role models constantly spending time with and talking to people who are outside the normal group. So Francis's message is really not very radical. It's actually very fundamental to what the sacred texts of Christianity are about. However, I also, you know, we talk a lot about gender, about the roles of men and women in our classes. And so in places where Pope Francis could be more radical, he's not. I mean, unfortunately, he is not making any proclamations that would allow for women to enter into roles of leadership in the Catholic Church. And my students would like to see that. You know, they would like to see more equality between men and women in all of the world's religions.
We also always see in social media, sometimes somebody will post something from the Torah. Somebody will post something from the Quran. Somebody will post something from the Bible. And most people, not knowing what they say, will just go ahead and share it. And a lot of times, you know, it's misguided. That was never said in the Quran. That was never said in the Torah, etc.
Or it's out of context.
Yes.
So all of the world's religions have a lot of beautiful texts that express love, that express wisdom, that express, you know, a guide for living. But unfortunately, most of the world's religions also have what are known, Phyllis Trible, a religious studies scholar, calls them texts of terror. They're the difficult texts. They're the ones that the passages that express violence and express a justification for violence. And so it's important, again, to be able to look at those in the context. Many times these texts of terror are written during times of warfare. You know, the nation of Israel or the Muslims in Mecca, they're being attacked. They're in a time of war. And so when there's a scripture that's expressing, you know, that is justifying violence, it has to be seen in the context of warfare. You know, these are people defending themselves or defending their right to a specific area. And of course, these texts are from thousands of years ago. You know, depending upon how you view them, for many people, they are cultural documents and the culture has changed. But even for people that see them as part of their sacred tradition, they need to be understood contextually and in terms of the cultures that they grew out of and that they are historical documents that need to be seen in that light.
As a scholar, I would imagine it's got to be pretty exciting for you with the recent discovery of the manuscript of the King James Bible. Well, just reading it and looking at it myself, I'm going, wow, this is incredible. I would be afraid to touch it, you know, because of the writing. And it's just, you can tell that it's very, very old. And whether it be the Quran or anything else, it's still in antiquity.
Right. Those older documents are very interesting. I mean, the King James Bible, of course, was also a political project, you know, by King James. I mean, he wanted it translated in a specific way that would justify the divine right of kings. So you see a lot of the language that has now entered into our understanding of the Christian documents or the sacred scriptures of Christianity were crafted by a group of scholars working under the mandate of a king to stress the kingship of God in order to justify the kingship of his own rule, unsuccessfully, since his son's head was chopped off soon after that. But I mean, it is kind of interesting. It's interesting to look at all of those documents and what their historical background is.
And as you mentioned, the king and the ruling, this brings us up again to the upcoming speaker, Cesar Rivera, who is going to be talking about law and religion.
Absolutely. So to what extent does the secular law and the sacred text, I mean, how do you negotiate that? And that's one thing that the United States has been very committed to doing, to allow people to have a religious expression and religious freedom and yet maintain a secular government. That's a tricky balancing act. And it's one that we've been challenged with recently. I think that that's okay. I think it's good for our country to face these challenges, negotiate these issues, and then hopefully come out of it with our continued commitment to religious freedom, freedom of expression, but ultimately secular law that allows for every one of our citizens to live their fullest life possible.
And if people want additional information about what we've been discussing, is this calendar available on your webpage or where do they go?
Yes, they can go to the website. It's just Religious Studies at UTEP. We have a Facebook page, which is also Religious Studies at UTEP. They can Google me, look for me on the UTEP homepage, Anne Horak. There's lots of different ways to find the information, and I'd be happy to share it with anybody who'd like to come. These lectures are open to the public. They are at 6 p.m. in the evenings at the Rubin Center, so it's an easy place to park. You can park right in there their parking lot at 6 p.m., and it's an easy place to get into. And we'd love to have anybody from the campus or the community join us.
Well, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've been visiting with Dr. Ann Horak. She is the director of the Religious Studies program here on campus and has been talking about the Religion and Culture Speaker Series. The next speaker will be November 17th, and that'll be Cesar Rivera talking about religious studies and law and religion, and that'll be at 6 p.m. in the Rubin Center. Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Community Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Evan Walsh. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.